I think the unbanning of the ANC and the release of Mandela are major, major moves. I mean, psychologically, if you were to ask me last year, was that going to happen, I would say there's absolutely no way. I mean, it just was inconceivable. I mean, up until last year, the ANC was this major taboo subject. I mean, you couldn't have the colors around. I mean, there was absolutely no way I could wear a t-shirt like this. I'd be arrested. People clandestinely had flags. There were units of ANC around. If they got caught, they were in jail. I mean, it was I can't describe to you how clandestine the movement was, and how people, UDF was fine, but ANC, you just didn't talk openly about them at all. And every now and then these pamphlets would go around by ANC, you knew that cells were operating. So, I mean, I haven't been there when the ANC's been unbanned and all this stuff is open, but to me that's an amazing psychological change. And that the ANC now has the ability to organize openly. And it has, I mean, it has a huge support in the country, and to be able to organize that support, which it really needs to do, that's amazing. Release of Mandela is extremely hopeful. People would say, when we would discuss Mandela's release or imprisonment, people would say, you know, Mandela is just such an important figure in jail. You know, he does so much. We can organize so much around Mandela in jail. What a symbol. And then people would say, you know, there's so much expectations resting on the man. What is going to happen when he comes out? You know, it's going to be big anticlimax. And there's a huge hopeful sign in that it wasn't. I mean, Mandela has done amazing things since he's been out of jail. He has built up an extreme amount of credibility. And he's proved himself to be a real leader outside jail as well. And that for me is extremely hopeful. Then there are other small things that are happening, the lifting of some of the emergency regulations, the reduction by half of compulsory military service for white men, that's with the independence of Namibia and the end of the Namibian war. a lot of little things like this are happening, and those are real movements. The beginning of the negotiation process, again, just seeing F.W. de Klerk and Mandela standing next to each other in Krediskia, the residence of the state president. I mean, that was inconceivable last year, and there it's happening. That's amazing. And the fact that they met together. all these things are happening, and we're filled with hope. On the other hand, South Africa is a country where you learn to grow very extremely cynical, and often tidbits are given and, you know, it turns out to be nothing. I mean, the government tries lots of different things to stay in power, and one always wonders, well, they're obviously trying still to stay in power, and how is that working? Well, what's that dynamic? How is it going to end because of that? And, I mean, I still remain pretty cynical. And the last thing there was one last point I was going to make. I can't remember. Maybe I'll come back to it. Do you want to also comment?
Yeah, I mean, like, my fear is, you know, what will happen if the negotiations don't work out? That because I see, you know, like, probably, I don't know, I mean, I hate to say that, but, like, a revolution breaking out if, you know, like, people have been talking and nothing comes out and stuff like that. And
people
also,
are impatient.
Yeah.
Extremely impatient.
And also, one thing, I mean, I've learned from the South African government is that when they move two steps forward, they have a tendency of moving four backwards. So you never know what point they're up to. So
I guess just the last point I just remember what I was going to say was, again, this whole thing, the legacy of apartheid. And for me, that's a sobering thought. I mean, what the apartheid government has created is just horrendous, and that's just going to live on forever. Well, not forever, but that's going to live on for a long time, which a new government is going to have to deal with. The structures are just have just for years and years since 1948 been geared towards apartheid. I mean, have been apartheid structures, and to try and sort out that whole mess, I mean, that's very sobering. But I still think that we're on the path there.
Among the Hoitsa, the African people, what is the I don't know how the best way to phrase the question, but if you could say percentages, what kind of percentage of the white South African people are anti-apartheid? Would it be 10% anti? Would it be 40%? What's the mood among the white South African people?
Okay, I come from Cape Town, which is generally thought of as the liberal centre of South Africa. And so I might have a bit of a distorted view because of that. I think, you know, I get shocked every time I go into the hinterland and see just how conservative things are.
What percent of whites in Cape Town is Afrikaner?
I'm not sure. It's more English speaking. But
okay, because I thought so.
And so as to percentages, I'm not sure. It does seem clear, though. I mean, clearly the vast majority of whites are not particularly liberal or progressive or anything at all. It's a very small percentage, and it's people concentrated in the main cities of Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban. And it seems that people are leaving the Nationalist Party, which has been in power since 1948, and that's F.W. de Klerk's party, and they're going to the right. People are digging in their heels, and there are a lot of people extremely unhappy with what de Klerk's doing. That's whites, and that they're moving to the right. I'm not sure how large the kind of liberal group is. When the recent elections, the National Party won, is the official opposition, and that's to the right of the Nationalists, and the Democratic Party, which is to the left, which is liberal, did fairly well. It won all the seats in Cape Town, practically, but it didn't win in any of the rural areas or any of the Afrikaner strongholds. So I'm not sure if that gives you some indication. Any other question?
The famous American question is, how do you feel about sanctions?
Okay, do you want to ask it?
Yeah, no.
She asked, how do I feel about sanctions?
I'll give my view too,
It's interesting, when I was in South Africa, and part of the mass democratic movement, which is actually a term, I don't know if it's used in the States, in press at all, no. The mass democratic movement, but basically is a term that has been coined recently over the last 2 years, and it basically includes the United Democratic Front, COSATU, which I mentioned in regards to the strikes, those are the two main groups, and it would include things like church leaders and that, Tutu and Busek, etc. They would be formed part of the mass democratic movement. And when you're in the country, you tend to feel your power and think that, you know, the power it comes from the people, and that it's the forces, it's the uprising, it's the mass protests that are changing the government's minds. And that's kind of the perception of people in a way. Sanctions is quite a big debate, but a lot of times it's debated amongst business people in the country and people who are leaving the country, etc. I think since I've been in the States and been working with the anti-apartheid organization here, who are strong proponents of sanctions, I think it's clear to me that sanctions played a very, very large role in the moves of de Klerk at the moment. I mean, it affected the economy greatly, and it really speeded up de Klerk's moves. It doesn't seem to me that he would have been quite... He would have made such large moves, like the release of Mandela and the unbanning of the ANC, without there were this enormous pressure, international pressure and economic pressure. And I think it would be a real big mistake to lift sanctions at this point, because that's what de Klerk wants. As soon as sanctions are lifted, which he's hoping by these moves to say, look, you know, I'm actually doing something. Now give back something. Give me some help, you know. I've made these major moves. Give me, lift some of the sanctions, you know. Let us get our economy going again. As soon as that starts happening, it's going to slow down the whole process. I mean, they're going to dig their heels in again, because the economy, if it gets better, there's no reason to keep on changing and negotiating.
But then why can't they say just at the same time, well, if you don't give us anything, we're no better off than if we just kept everything as it was? Why shouldn't they just stay if they don't accomplish anything?
The what?
If, for example, the sanctions all stay in place and they don't, the Klerk's government doesn't get anything, then they would have failed completely. It would have been, you know...
Sanctions would have...
No. Well, de Klerk would have failed. There'd be no reason for anyone to vote for him anymore if he wasn't accomplishing anything. Why shouldn't they just stay, you know, or go back even the way they were?
The sanctions?
If they don't get some of the loans or get some of the situation with the minerals and things like that straightened out, it seems like no one would vote for him then.
Right.
If he wasn't able to get something from foreign countries.
Yeah, then he won't get any support from the people,
yeah,
because they're going to say to him, you know, come on, you're giving all these concessions and the international community is giving you nothing. Right. Yeah, and I think that's a large part of why he's losing support.
Mm.
Yeah, then if he's not getting support, then like other groups will get support, which are maybe like the
conservative.
Yeah. No. Maybe like ANC.
From who?
From the people. Like,
what
we
people?
Get support from the people.
What people?
So,
no, we're talking, I think, about the mainly the, like, within the white community. Because, yeah.
Okay, I think there's a question in the back. Should we just take it?
Well, yeah, and I don't know exactly their places, but I guess he was sort of implying, why would the clerk, if he's not going to gain anything, that it will be good for him to have made the concessions?
Right.
Do you have any fear that someone who might replace the clerk would be even worse?
Some of what? For the people?
Right.
Should we as an international community give him some commendation to prevent someone worse from replacing him? Or should we just sort of try to keep the economic pressure on,
I mean,
what would you advocate?
My position at the moment is to keep on the economic pressure and the sanctions, to keep on the boycotts, because I think a lot more pressure has to be applied for successful negotiations to begin. There is the danger, sure, of whites moving so much more right, of the rise of a kind of military, a white supremacist grouping.
Neo-Nazi type of group.
Yeah, which is happening, you know, they're gaining support. So I guess I hear what you're saying, but I don't think now's the time to say... Huh? Good job, right, exactly. I mean, the nationalists have been in power since 1948. And
this is just, I guess, the beginning, really, you know,
of the beginning of the
long process.
Yeah.
Dan.
And you may not be able to answer this because I know you've been out for, well, a lot of this has been happening, but it seemed like while there was so much repression against so many of the popular sectors, the ANC was banned and the UDF, there was repression and so forth, that the churches took much of a leadership position, or at least took a visible leadership position with Desmond Tutu and Alan Bozak and some of those folks. They seem to not be as visible right now. I mean, there's so much attention on Mandela and the ANC. What do you see as the role of the churches at this point in the South African struggle?
There's always been, like I said, the churches form, or the church leaders form part of the mass democratic movement. So they definitely need to be part of that unifying force. People who are in discussion with each other, people who make democratic decisions about what different strategies are and what the processes are going to be. The church leaders, Tutu has always said he's, which you're referring to, he's a caretaker of the struggle while the leaders are in jail. And he said that again and again. And it's clear that at this point he's taking a back seat because of that. Because he was sort of forced into that position, into that role, because of the protection he got as being an archbishop of South Africa. And the haven that the church provided for political meetings. Practically every June 16th commemoration I've been to has been held in a church. And that's because it'll be banned elsewhere, you know? Or that's because you're going to get a lot more repression by the police in some other venue. For the whole of 1985, 1986, when all these organizations were banned, meetings were just consistently banned. Consistently, without a doubt, they'd be banned. So they were all held in churches. The church played a large role in providing venues and safe places for not only gatherings, but also for activists and people. At the moment, there doesn't seem as great a need for that because of the kind of loosening up of things. A lot more meetings are allowed to happen. The leaders have been released. I think that the church still... Yeah, like you said, I don't know if I can answer it, but I think the church still has a role to play. It has to show that it sides with the oppressed. It has to be part of the struggle, the liberation struggle, and it has to be there to aid the mass democratic movement in whichever way the mass democratic movement wants. I mean, that's my viewpoint. Others would say it needs to remain a little distant from that, but at this point, I think it needs to be part of that identification with the people, and be part of that power. Yeah, so that's it. I mean, I think Tutu is still quoted a lot, and especially on sanctions or whatever, and still seen as a figurehead, especially because in the States, I think he is a well-known figure, and he has a responsibility to the mass democratic movement because of that, because the only reason he's there is because of the MDM. So he needs to be accountable for the things he says, and yeah.
While you have people like Tutu who provide that kind of leadership, it's been my understanding that a good portion of the church has not sided with the oppressed and has been part of the perpetuation of apartheid system. What's happening with that? That whole part of the church that has been part of with the oppressor, is that changing now?
Okay. Yeah, South Africa is this weird country where the government says that it's a Christian government, it's Christian nationalism, and most of the Afrikaners would belong to the Dutch Reformed Church. And there's been a, I mean, I can't go through all the processes, but apartheid was theologically justified for a long time until, I think even recently now, the Dutch Reformed Church has declared it a heresy and doesn't support it at all. And in some ways, that's in line with de Klerk and the nationalist government, because the movement is away from the use of the term apartheid. I don't think de Klerk actually uses it, or I'm not sure, maybe he has. But it's sort of like the government does not carry out apartheid policies anymore. Apartheid is a heresy. but the Dutch Reformed Church is still largely the Church of the Afrikaner, and it'll go along with a few ups and downs. It'll go side with what de Klerk and the nationalist government does, I believe. And then you have that's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have the South African Council of Churches, led by Frank Chikane, and Tutu was a past leader of the South African Council of Churches, and they come out very strongly against apartheid. But again, there's so many dynamics in the church in South Africa, and part of that is that whilst the leadership may be very progressive and anti-apartheid, often it's member churches that are pretty conservative, and that's not necessarily even white or whites that are conservative. I mean, a lot of black churches that are politically very conservative. So you have this odd structure where often at the grassroots you've got a conservative church, but the leadership is coming out with all this anti-apartheid stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that there aren't a lot of progressive churches or people that support the mass democratic movement. And then a large group that is often forgotten about are the African traditional churches. And often they tend to be pretty conservative as well. And that they're outside the South African Council of Churches, which the SACC incorporates most of the mainline churches, other than the Dutch Reformed Church and the Catholics.
You haven't said what the ANC's demands are. Maybe it'd be a good idea to run through what they ask.
The list?
Well, the main one.
The release of all political people can help me because I think they need to. Release of all political prisoners, release of all detainees, lifting of the main. Is it lifting of Group Areas Act and Population Registration Act?
Mm-hmm. Could you specify what the Population Registration Act is?
Well, the main pillars of apartheid, the main apartheid legislation, the lifting of the state of emergency. There are about six things.
How about the right to vote?
No, these are preconditions. You mean talking about preconditions?
Right.
So actually, I don't even know if it's the apartheid pillars.
There still is a free movement, right? You still have to have like a passport to get from one place to another. Or is that lifted now?
You mean a pass?
Yeah, the pass system.
No, that there's no pass system anymore. There's a control of people still, definitely, but it's not quite as blatant as having everyone carry passes and have to be in certain areas or not in certain areas.
My question is like, you know, when we were trying to get our college to divest, we got a lot of people like the, I think the representative of some of the companies, you know, what, where the money is invested in the U.S. And one guy was telling us, he said, he just came from South Africa, and he said, these companies are helping out the blacks in South Africa. How significant is the help that you see, you know, like them as helping there? Do you see them as just purely, like doing purely business and stuff like that?
I think it's
hard to hear the question in the back.
Or you're not supposed to turn around when you say your questions and get them up a bit.
Oh, okay. I said one of the company representatives, you know, where our coverage money is invested. He said he recently went to South Africa and we were trying to convince the college to divest, and some of the arguments that we got were that these companies are there, you know, like, oh, first of all, they got us, they told us, okay, these companies that are operating on the Sullivan principles, they are there because mainly they're helping out the black South Africans by like building schools or so stuff like that. And secondly, they said, well, if we step out, then Japan is going to step in. So, and if Japan steps in, they may not be doing the good work that we were doing there. So I said, my question is, like her being from South Africa, do you see any significant help from like American, besides employing the people?
Right.
Okay, besides employment.
I mean, I think the main reason why a company, any company, international, multinationals, are in South Africa is to make money. I mean, I think that that's pretty clear, that they wouldn't be there if they weren't making major profits. And it's great PR to help blacks as have side programs to provide better schooling for black kids or whatever. I mean, I'm pretty cynical about the whole thing. I think it's a lot of it's probably paternalistic. It's not actually achieving much on the large scale, and it's pockets. It's little pockets of people that are maybe benefiting. Sure, there are some people who probably benefit from it, but we're talking. If you're talking about national politics, it's just not an argument for me to say to use that against sanctions, not having sanctions.
Oh, but it's like a famous argument.
Sure.
By
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is here.
Yeah.
Okay. And like one thing, like the companies in South Africa, they employ blacks, but it's cheap labor. They don't pay them as much as they pay their employer here. Even if those people have the same education, they don't pay as much as they do here. And that's why a lot of companies who are closing, like in the United States, they are closing their companies and move to South Africa because they can get everything cheap without paying. And I think they are taking their part, I mean, in like apartheid system, they are kind of cooperating, they are contributing to the poverty of the like black South Africans. And I think when they talk about divest, I think that was a kind of an important issue, that they should determine like how much they pay like an American, so that they can pay a South African as much as they pay an American.
Mm-hmm. Which they never do. Dan?
If we're going to, it seems like things are changing quickly in South Africa, at least the stuff we read on. If you were going to tell us as a group of North Americans half a Earth away, two or three key things we should be watching for over the next 6 months, what I'm asking you to sort of look into your crystal ball, but not necessarily predict what's going to be happening, but what would be some key signals that we should be looking for? What are some things that we should keep our eyes open about? In terms of if whether or not there's real change going on in South Africa?
I think the central event at the moment is the negotiation process. I mean, that to me seems to be where it's all happening. You know, it's happening at that top level.
Is there a timeline on that today?
I'm not sure about that, because there was for that initial meeting. But I'm not sure what came. Does anyone know if another time came out from that? I'm not sure about that. So I think that would probably be the main place where things are going to happen.
Maybe freeing the political prisoner?
Right, and along with that, a lot of those preconditions for the real negotiation, the negotiations that have happened already were just pre-negotiations or something like that.
Talks about,
thank you. Okay. And so there's still a lot of preconditions that the ANC have set, which you asked me to list and I wasn't able to, that need to actually be met. And so we need to watch out for those, because those are important, because the ANC, the whole negotiation process is such that it's give and take. So the ANC is going to have to give a little bit, you know, it might have to say, okay, well, that's one precondition which, okay, you don't have to meet or something, just to get to that negotiation table. I mean, it's a process of give and take. And that's going to be difficult to explain to supporters when those preconditions have been set for so long.
Mm-hmm. The clerk says some of those prisoners are just common criminals and should be released.
Well, a lot of that is if they're in for guerrilla activity.
Yeah, if they've blown up something,
yeah.
Should you let them go?
Yeah, that's going to be a big issue. But already a lot of ANC people have been released, people who haven't been involved in violence as such.
But I mean,
and trials have been stopped.
That's not fair, because I mean, like the same.
It's the revolution.
I mean, like the whites do not get detained for the same acts.
They do.
Like the policemen who raid Soweto.
I'm not saying, you know, like just the common white person. I'm saying like the police, they don't get detained, you know, like for just going out and shooting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Because there's even one, there's one guy, I think he's in London now, and he's saying he was in the, firing squad? Like, it's kind of a secret South African, like, force.
Underground.
Yeah, underground. Like, it's run by the government just to kill everyone who says, like, if you say something about, like, oh, white supremacy or whatever, they will just get you and they will kill you. And that guy is in London now and he's saying, oh, we used to do this and this and this. Will he ever be put in court? No. I mean, they will let free.
Okay, I'm going to take one last question before we close. Jackie?
I just know from talking to other South Africans that it's really difficult, or like they say, we get lots of misinformation and not enough information. Can you recommend the best source of advocacy information about South Africa, or the most accurate reporting that may be available to most of us? Or
you mean in terms of mass media?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that in the States. I mean, the American Committee on Africa, which is based in New York, but has national distribution networks. I mean, some of the stuff's here are very good. I'm not sure in terms of actual. Are you asking newspapers and stuff?
Yeah, anything.
What some of the stuff I've read is pretty confusing to people here, I would think, if you haven't been able to follow the whole process along and don't know basic information. I'm not quite sure what to recommend, I'm sorry.
It depends, you know, like, I think, I don't know about, like, you know, I used to use to read the Christian Science Monitor, but it also depends on who wrote, you know, like, one day I was reading something about Namibia, like in the New York Times, and man, I was like, just the using of terms, you know, of who to label a terrorist and who to label a rebel and who to, you know, like that totally, you know, like makes sense. Like it's important in, like, within the struggle, because some of the information is distorted, some of the information is but like, except like the American media, like I think the Chinese said, it has a short term memory. You know, like.
Yeah, the New York Times is not great on South African issues.
It you know, like your media, it, you know, like you followed
the Mandela issue, you know, like, for the day he was released, the whole day they spend, the whole day there, you know, they follow the every walk, and then after that, they're not saying anything about the man, and you wonder, is he still alive and stuff like that? Just, you know.
Yeah. Well, we end up, Mandela is coming to the States. People, do you know that? Ticker tape parade in New York City, June 20th.
Oh,
so you can
wow.
all go.
Wow.
Thanks all for coming.
Thank you.